information. So what are low-quality codable codes? What are private information? Little schemes. So a low-quality codable code is a code that encodes n bits to capital N bits. And we say that this code is qubitly low-quality codable if it has the following nice property. So I take an arbitrary message, I encode it with a code, then the message gets transmitted over a noisy channel, a constant fraction of bits is corrupted, but still, if I look at the corrupted message, if I want to recover just a single bit, say the I bit of the message, I can query qubits in the encoding, picked randomly, and with high probability I'll get the bit that I want. So this is the standard notion of local decodable codes. And they are closely related to Bayesian noise retrieval schemes. So a QCR of private information retrieval protocol is a protocol that involves Q plus one parties. So this is one user and Q servers. Each server holds a database. The database for us is a string of n bits. And the protocol allows the users to retrieve any bit that he wants from the database without revealing any information about this location I to any of the individual servers. So the goal of the research on private information retrieval literature is to minimize the communication complexity of such protocols. The goal of research in locally decodable codes is to come up with shorter locally decodable codes. So say I have some number Q, say 3, I allow myself 3 queries, so what is the shortest locally decodable code that I can obtain? So here is the summary of what was known in these problems. So let's start with locally decodable codes. So it's known that single query locally decodable codes do not exist. And that was observed in the initial paper that formally introduced the notion, the result of Katz and Trevisan. So what about two queries? So for two queries, the problem is resolved. There is an easy upper bound, so the Hadamard code, which says that, well, so there are two query locally decodable codes of length exponential in the message length. And in fact, this is tight. So Kirinidis and DeWolf have shown that, well, you do need this exponential law. So in this essentially settles down the question of the length of two query locally decodable codes. So for three queries, the situation is much more complicated. So there has been progress on lower bounds. So this is the story. The initial lower bound is n to the 3 halves. Then it was improved to n squared over log squared by Kirinidis and DeWolf. And the current record is n squared over log n due to David Butler. So, so there hasn't been much progress from the upper bound till this work. So the upper bound for three queries that we had was exponential in square root of n. And in fact, some people conjectured, and many people thought that the exponential dependence here may be unavoidable, saying that for any constant number of queries, you may need exponential in n to the epsilon length of the constant query locally decodable code. And so this is still not ruled out, but it looks like that this is not the case. So what we do in this work is the following. So unconditionally, we obtain three query locally decodable codes of length exponential in n to the 1 over this 8-digit number, so roughly 32 million. Yeah, I don't want to pronounce it. It's too much. So this is an unconditional result. So this is a theorem. So we go from exponential square root n to exponential n. Moreover, we show that under fairly solid number theoretic conjecture stating that the number of Mersenne primes is infinite, so the number of primes of the form 2 to the k minus 1 is infinite, there are three query locally decodable codes of length exponential in n to the 1 over log n. So it's the dependence on n in the exponent gets subpolynomial. And this holds for infinitely many values of n. So if there are infinitely many Mersenne primes, for infinitely many values of n, you have such locally decodable codes. And if you are unhappy with the statement, so having locally decodable codes for infinitely many values of n of certain length, it can be strengthened to saying that for all n, there are locally decodable codes of length exponential in n to the 1 over log n, where log n is to the power of 1 minus epsilon for every epsilon. But this requires a slightly stronger number theoretic conjecture. But again, it's quite old and solid, and number theories do believe. So it's a conjecture about the density of Mersenne primes. It was made by Lenstra, Poveranz, and Baxter. So under this conjecture, we get such results. As I said, locally decodable codes are very related with private information retrieval protocols. So our improvements happen in the language of locally decodable codes, but have has similar implications for PRs. So here is the story of driving transformation to people improvements. So for one server, if you have just one server, you do need linear amount of communication in a PIR scheme. And that's just the initial paper of Chorkol, right, Kushelevitz and Sudan. For two servers, the best known upper bound is cube root m, so it has never been improved since it was established in the initial paper. The best lower bound is 5 log n by Wiener and de Wolf. And for three servers, we have plenty of progress. So the initial paper achieved cube root m, then Ambayinis improved it to fifth root of m. Very unexpected result of Damien, Shai, Kushelevitz, and Raymond put the bound down to order n to the 1/5.25. And finally, we get this new result. So our unconditional result is n to the 1/32 million. The number is by one bigger than the number that you had in previous slide. So that they are roughly the same. Assuming that the number of Mersenne primes is infinite for infinitely many values of n, you can achieve such communication complexity, and then under the density assumption for Mersenne primes, the complexity goes down to here. So this is all this about the statement of the results, and so now to the proof. Any questions? Oh, it's a bad thing. Yeah, it's a bad thing. But now it gets for all m. So
all for all
this
m,
is for infinity many. This is slightly worse. Needs stronger assumption, but works for all m. So now to the proof. So the technique is novel. So all earlier constructions of locally decodable codes and target information retrieval schemes were, so some explicitly, some implicitly, were centered around the idea of taking your message, representing it by an evaluation of some low degree polynomial over finite fields, and then doing some tricks around interpolation. So this is completely not the case with this construction. We do something different, and here is what we do. So I won't prove all the results that I claimed in previous slides on the talk. I hope to somewhat cover the proof that there are three query locally decodable codes of length exponential in cube root n. So if you remember, the previous record was exponential in square root n. So I will show how to get exponential in cube root n length, and so this will show the most important of our techniques. So not all the tricks that we do, but most of it. So this is our goal for the talk, and the proof will consist of five steps. So first, I introduce some combinatorial objects that I call regular intersecting families. So this will be some purely combinatorial definition. I will say that so there is some universe, there is some family of sets, there are some big sets, small sets, and they intersect somehow nicely. So this is the first step for our proof. The second step is to say that, well, so a regular intersecting family of sets implies locally decodable codes. So give me a regular intersecting family, I will produce a locally decodable code out of it. So this is a very simple step. From now, so for the further steps, we forget about locally decodable codes and just work with regular intersecting families of sets. So as I said, so we have in a regular intersecting family, we have some big sets, some small sets. So So this step, the basic construction is very intuitive. I say that also, where do we observe some nice intersections between big sets and small sets? So we look some high dimensional linear space over a finite field. I choose big sets to be certain hyperplanes, small sets to be certain lines. And then, well, so once we have lines and hyperplanes, it's basic linear algebra to argue that they intersect nicely. So they do, and we get the basic construction. So the basic construction of regular intersecting families gives us, so implies locally decodable codes with good parameters, so not exceeding the best known, but so this is an interesting construction, but it does not beat the records. And then there are two more steps, so you can in fact modify, take the basic construction and modify it somewhat, so as to improve its parameters very significantly. And these will be our two last steps. So I will introduce two notions, notion of combinatorial niceness and algebraic niceness of sets, of subsets of finite fields, and then show that if certain nice subsets exist, you can in fact get regular intersecting families with very good parameters. So this is the plan of our proof. The proof will be on the blackboard, and I'm going to start now, so if there are any questions, we can delve into the proof. So I'm switching. Thank you. may imply locally decodable codes. The third step is a basic abstraction.
So regular intersecting families imply locally decodable codes, not the other way.
So one could relax the notion of regular intersecting family and then have equivalence and so on. I'm not doing this here. So the fact that I cannot obviously do it for Hadamard, it's fine. I'm just doing it in one way reduction. I'm not claiming the equivalence. Good. Did I answer?
Isn't it the case that the TIs are all the same?
No.
Then the QIRs.
No. They are all the same. Also this is the point. The Hadamard call will not fit here because Q is odd. And so this is a specific reduction. I define combinatorial object, I see that based on it I can do LDC. If you give me an LDC, I may be successful to construct a combinatorial object out of it, maybe not. I don't claim it. So this is my combinatorial object. So it is this universe, there are large sets are uniformly covered by small sets. And the key property is this last property. So this is why it's intersection property and not something else. So I say that if I take a large set and another large set, and I take a small set corresponding to one large set, say to this one, then its intersection with another large set should be even. So this is the intersection property. So if I look at set T sub I and T sub j, I take Q sub I r, so some small set from one of these, and its intersection with the other large sets should be even. So this is okay, this is not okay. But this will be fine. I mean, the intersection, say if Q is 3, well, this is a valid intersection.
Why was it not okay if R was even? Maybe
because if it's completely contained, then it's not good because Q is odd,
okay.
And so I do not want to be contained in a different set. So this is the definition of regular intersecting families. And so now I'll show how they imply local decodable codes and then proceed just on the language of intersections. So this is step one. This is step two. So the notion can be relaxed, one can have equivalence, but it's beyond the step. So how do I define a code? So my locally decodable codes will be linear codes. How do I define a linear code? Well, if I degenerate the matrix, it's the most natural thing. So given the regular intersecting family with parameters Q, M, capital M, and R, I will define a locally decodable code, so Q locally decodable code, encoding M with three. And I define it by the generator matrix. So the generator matrix should have n rows and capital N columns. Okay. So now if I want to encode some message x, I just say that, well, so the encoding of x is x times p. So I have the regular intersecting family. How do I yield the generator matrix? So it's very simple. I need to define somehow these rows. So I will just take the set T sub I and take its incidence vector to be the ith row of the matrix. So this is the whole thing. So this is the definition of the code. So the columns of my generator matrix are in one-to-one correspondence with the elements of this universe. So I just take the set T sub I, I look at its incidence vector. So this is my definition of the linear.
So this is a characteristic vector of set T.
Of set T sub I, yes. Yeah. So the ith row corresponds to set T sub I. We have n those sets, and this defines the matrix.
So you didn't use the small sets in defining the code?
Yeah, at all. So the small sets will be useful for decoding. So for the local decodable code, I need to define the code, I need to define the decoding procedure. So, and the decoding procedure is the following. So somebody encodes the message, it gets corrupted. So how do I decode? So here is the decoding algorithm. So my decoder picks R. Uh, So my So suppose that I want to decode the I want to decode the ith coordinate. So remember that so essentially what I'll do, I'll pick a random small set and then query the locations corresponding to that small set and compute the XOR. So this is what I'm doing here. So the decoder picks R uniformly at random, so and computes and outputs. The dot product also, this is formal, but it computes the dot product of the received message with the incidence vector of Q I sub R.
Did you read
that? What? So this is the received message. So when I do say the received message, so what can be the received message? It's X and T plus noise. So what is the input to the decoder? It's the encoded message, possibly corrupted after it. So that's what I said. So it's X times G, so this is the encoding, plus some noise vector. We can say X times G, indicating that it has been potentially corrupted. So in what the decoder does, it computes the dot product of this message with the incidence vector of Q I times R. And this requires only Q queries inside the received message, because Q I sub R has weight Q, so it's very sparse vector. So it's the incidence vector.
A little I.
So the decoder wants to decode the I.
Coding I. This is right, decoding the I.
Decoding I.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the decoder decodes SI. So and this is it. So now I define the code, so I just took those sets and used them to define the gain vector matrix of the code. And I define the decoding procedure. So the decoder simply picks a random R and makes Q queries corresponding to this small set. So it picks a random small set corresponding to T sub I and makes those Q queries and computes the XOR. So this is the code, this is the decoding. So why it's a locally decodable code, I don't want, so it's essentially an exercise based on the properties of the regular and perspective family to show that it's really a locally decodable code. So for some probability of error, you have reasonable probability of correct decoding. I don't want to go into it because I think that so it's more important to see how we really build these things. But it's several lines of proof. I don't want to read it. So now, actually, to the construction. So at this point, I forget about locally decodable code. From now on, I'll be talking only in the language of regular intersecting families. So this is our object. How do we construct these objects?
So how do I correct this until it tells the right bit? How do you have to correct this? That product always gives you anxiety. So why?
So this is exactly what I don't want to.
It's an exercise.
It's easy and short, but I think that the construction is more important.
Does TI contain I?
Doesn't have to. I mean, they're in the deep. TI is a subset of this large universe, capital M. And I is TI is a subset of this universe, and I is a subset of M. So, I mean, it's even not very well defined. But it doesn't have to, there are no receivers like that.
Can you say why you need
the R? So odd and even arise for the following reasons. So suppose that, and this may answer your question. So suppose that no noise had happened, right? Suppose that there had been no noise, so that we don't care about it. And there was some message encoded, so somebody came up and so encoded some message. So this is xi, xn. So this is the vector that was mul- so somebody has come up with a vector x1 xn and has computed the encoding, which is simply the sum of rows corresponding, so sum of several rows of the encoding matrix. Then, and now I want to decode the bit I. So what I'll do, I'll pick one of these q tuples. So one of these random q tuples corresponding to, so these tuples q sub I are. So these are my tuples, q I 1, q I 2, and so on. Then I take one of them, and I compute the dot, so, and I simply XOR the bits corresponding to this q tuple. So essentially the property that is being exploited is, so whether xi is present in, so whether xi was 1 or 0, it affects, so I know that this set q sub I has even intersection with all rows in this matrix, except a single row, a row i. So this will tell me that really the value of the dot product depends only on the fact whether xi was, so whether this row was present in the linear combination or not present in the linear combination.
The sum of the columns is the ith unit vector.
Exactly, the sum of the columns is the ith unit vector. Yep.
So you were recommending
the
x sub I exactly, not even the high property.
Exactly. So now I assume that there have been no errors, then I recover it exactly. So if there are no errors, I recover the bit exactly by this process. If there have been some errors, so if some coordinates have been corrupted, well, then I may have bad luck and maybe this coordinate was corrupted, so then I will have some errors. But there is a good threshold, so.
So here the threshold is less than 1 over q, right? So in order for this to have a chance to work, the threshold of the number of errors, the fraction of errors is less than 1 over q?
I can tell you the threshold for the final results. So yeah, so here, so really here the threshold will depend on the constant with the non-Omega notation. I don't want to write it explicitly. But finally, so we tolerate good amount of errors. So this column whose length is 1 over 32 million, or those of length n to the 1 over log log n. So with error around, say, 8%, they give the correct decoding the probability 60%. So that's, and if error goes to 0, the probability of correct decoding goes to 1. So the relation with error is good. So it's nothing like 10 to the minus 10. So are people okay with proceeding to the constructions? Okay, yeah. So yeah, I'm releasing this also. So from now on, I'll be talking only about regular second families. There will be no longer any more protocols. So and now we'll prove something. So as I said, our basic construction has some very clean linear algebraic intuition. So I will look at some very high dimensional linear space over a finite field. I will pick my large sets to be some unions of cosets of hyperplanes, so some unions of hyperplanes. In that space, my small sets will be lines in the space, and I will be arguing intersections based on some simple linear algebra. So in order to do it, I need to show that some arrangement of hyperplanes is possible, and there is one simple step that I will do formally. So let P be an odd prime. So this is some technical statement that's not very clear why we need it immediately. And m be an integer greater than or equal to p minus 1, then there exists two sequences of vectors. U1, so m is greater than p minus 1, and n I define to be m choose p minus 1. Then there exist two sequences of vectors, u1 with m, and v1. So those all of them are vectors in f e to the m. they'll satisfy certain constraints on their inner product. The constraints are the following. So and it will be non-zero on P. So when reading the proof, and but the lemma will be. All these properties, and I hope that you will make it. So, but here is the intuition, right? So, if partition the space into its cosets, I throw one coset away, and I look at other 2 minus 1 cosets. And those cosets I partition in lines. So I partition in lines where every line stays completely within the coset. So we'll prove all the statements, but this is the geometric feature. So these sets Q, I sub R are lines, and in fact these are lines that live within this hyperplane, in this coset of hyperplanes. But now we'll prove formally all the properties of the regular coset. So what properties do we need to prove?
I think I already
So we need to prove all these statements. So first, well, some of most of them are trivial, I mean, except maybe one, this last one. So Ti is a subset of our universe. It's offset, it's of large size. It's of size omega n. This is guaranteed because we look at the case when p is fixed, m grows to infinity. So Ti is essentially the whole thing. It's omega n. Now, we need to show that these sets Q, I sub R that we defined, so that they are of a cardinality Q. This is obvious. Lines are of length Q. We need to show that they are subsets of Ti. So let's argue it formally. It's fairly easy. Let's argue it there. So I take R in Ti. So what does it mean that I take R in Ti? It means that R, so Ui, times R is in FP star. Right? This is the definition of being a Ti. And now I look at Q I sub R. But what is Q I sub R? The definition is that this is the set of points R plus lambda Ei plus lambda in FP. Right? But now I'll show that, well, every point of this form will also be in Ti. Because ui times lambda ui plus ui times r plus lambda di, so can be written as ui times r plus lambda ui times vi. But ui times vi is zero, but by our construction. So each of the points in the set have the same dot product with ui as r. So if r was in ti, all these points are in ti. So this is the whole proof of the containment. And the intuition again is that, so all what I have done, so how I'm treating the vectors ui and vi, so I have taken these hyperplanes and I choose the lines whose direction is within the hyperplane. So if one point is there, the whole line is there. So I'm done with this intersection properties, and there is one key property that the intersection with other TIs is even. So let's argue this. Number of lambda in FP such that UG dot product R plus lambda VI is in FT star. Right? So I haven't done anything clever here. So this QIR is a line of this one. TJ are the points that have dot product in FT star with UJ. So I think that, so what is the cardinality of intersection? This is the number of points on the line such that UJ times these points is an FT star. So, well, and this is essentially syntactic. So now let's rewrite it. So this is the number of lambda in P such that UJ, comma R plus lambda UJ, comma VI is in fact this time. So don't look at the last step, but at least this transformation. So this transformation was that I just opened the brackets here. So UJ, the dot product and sum of things, is just the sum of the products. But what we know about this quantity? So that lemma tells us that this quantity is non-zero. So I'm just looking at the linear form, sum number, plus lambda times some non-zero number. And I'm asking, so for how many lambda is this quantity non-zero? Well, but exactly from b minus 1, because it's a linear form, it takes every value in the field once. So how many times it takes non-zero values? B minus 1 times. So the cardinality of intersection is b minus 1 and 0 modulo 2. So this is So this is the whole basic construction. So what we have shown, so and if one looks carefully at the parameters, so the parameters are the following. So Q is some prime, so is any odd prime. So odd prime. M is M choose P minus 1, choose Q minus 1 for arbitrary integer M. M is of the form Q to the M. Well, and R is even not important for the parameters of locally decodable codes. And now if one converts it into locally decodable codes, the locally decodable, so we have got Q locally decodable codes of length exponential in N to the 1 over U minus 1. So say for 2, where Q is 3, so we will be getting 3 query locally decodable codes of exponential the square root N, so length exponential the square root N. This matches the best norm. If we, so the construction works for larger primes, but larger primes, it would be inferior to previous records, so the construction of Bimini, Schleiermacher, and Riemann would be better, but it would be quite decent, so it's nice. And the main thing about it is that it can get even better. So, so what is the idea of further improvement? So here is the picture that represents what we have done. So we have this large universe, we have sets Ti, and we have so these are our sets, so the unions for sets of n planes are sets Ti. Then we have these small sets QIR that are lines. And how can we improve it? So our idea is the following. So now we are querying the whole lines. So our queries are whole lines in space. We'll try to query not whole lines, but rather subsets of lines. So instead of, so now, well, if Q is say 7, I will query 7 points. But for my next step, I'll say, well, I will not be querying along the whole line. I will be querying only some small subset of the line. Out of 7 points, I will query say 3 points. Subsets of lines. we choose sets Q and R to be subsets of line. Well, and it's, I mean, so it's very easy to argue the intersection of a line with a hyperplane. It's much harder to argue the intersection of a subset of a line with a hyperplane, especially with the union of cosets of hyperplane. So we cannot do just that. So we need to sacrifice something, and or to play with some other properties of this construction. So well, and that's what we do. So in that, I'll just say that we choose more clever arrangements. So our arrangement of hyperplanes will be more complicated. So our vectors UI VI will have more complicated restrictions on their dot products. So more clever arrangements. This is some philosophical view of what we'll be doing further. And really, what we'll do now, so I will introduce two definitions that will be looking somewhat scary and mysterious, but I don't know a better way. So I'll introduce two definitions and then say that, so if you give me a set, so this will be some property of subsets of FP. So I'll say that a subset of FP is combinatorially nice if it has some property. It's algebraically nice if it has some other property. Both properties are non-obvious. And then I'll say that if you give me a subset which is simultaneously algebraically and combinatorially nice, I can construct you out of a regular intersecting family with some good parameters. And apparently such sets exist, and this all happens. So here are our notions. So here is our notion of combinatorial niceness. Particular, what we have shown before is that the set S just the whole empty star. So this is a set which is p minus 1 combinatorially nice. Right? Because we have seen that, in fact, I can choose n, this m to be m choose p minus 1, which is of the form omega m to the p minus 1. And I can design this family of vectors where the uivi is 0, your ujvi is non-zero. So, but now I define it more generally, I define it as a property of the set S. So this is one notion that we need. The other notion is algebraic kindness. So what is the time limit?
Let's be late by half an hour, so maybe 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes, okay.
Stop at 5:30.
Okay, yeah, I'll, so we'll get to some logical things. We won't see the whole thing, but so, well, we have already seen the basic construction. It's half of the whole working. The fact that you can extend it is, the set S was again empty star, the set S0 was also FP star, and the set S1 was FP. So you can check that that really these things happen. I mean, so FP star has even intersection with all affine transformations of the whole field. But affine transformations of the whole field keep the field fixed. So this intersection is always P-1, right? And it's always easy. So both of these notions were used implicitly there, but you can, I mean, extract them and then say really what we need. So the theorem that uses the interplane between these notions is the following. So here is the statement. S is also an empty. It may follow from some, I mean, it may be implied by one of these restrictions, but. But this is the main theory that uses the interplane of these notions and produces local decodable codes. So here I stated it in terms of directly local decodable codes. Really, of course, it implies regular intersecting families, and those apply local decodable codes, but this is the whole reduction. And after it, so really all we need is to design this set, so to design the subsets of FP star that exhibit both of these weird properties simultaneously, that exhibit combinatorial niceness, that exhibit algebraic niceness. So I'll see if we have time to prove it. I mean, it's a simple proof. Given this definition, the reduction is easy. The harder thing is really to design the sets. But I hope that we will prove the theorem also. But in order to get the first improvement upon the previous constructions, we need and what I hope to do to show equally locally decodable codes of length exponential in cube root m, we just needed p equals 7, and the set S should be 1, 2, 3, 4. The set S zero in this case. Okay, yeah, I won't. So somehow, if you take p equals 7, if you choose the set S to be 1, 2, 4, then this works. And so this exhibits algebraic niceness, and this is a finite statement. P is 7. This set. So this is a statement about finite number of things. So you can verify it by hand. You can verify it by computer. It's trivial. But of course there is a reason why it works. And then combinatorial niceness. You cannot verify it by hand like that because it talks about asymptotics and goes to infinity, families of sets of vectors. It is an easy construction showing that for that set there exists such families. So in the last few minutes I would rather talk about the proof of the theorem than about constructing these sets. So here is how we prove the theorem. The proof is very similar I need to erase something, but in the end to prove the theorem, but both notions are needed in this notion.
RIFs.
I have I will be building an RAF. I will not be building a locally codable code. So I will release this theorem because I'm building a regular intersecting family, not a locally codable code anyway. So
you can move the blackboard and then try it.
Wow. So their cardinality is Q, so Q for us will be cardinality of S1, they are all of the same cardinality, and we should argue this intersection. And well, so as one might guess by now, so we're talking about intersections. So we'll write here. And once we look at the intersection, we'll see the intersection of this form, and it will be even. So I'll write it out, and I think I'll stop here. So I want to add to look at the intersection of QIR intersected with some set GJ. So what is the cardinality of this intersection? So this is the number of lambda in FP such that UJ times R plus lambda EI is in S0. Right. So QIR intersect J, given their definitions, this is the number of lambda in FP, the number of lambda in S1, because this is now the definition of QIR, such that the dot product is in S0. So let's rewrite it. So the number of lambda in S1, such that UJ times R plus lambda UJ EI using S0. So again, the whole mathematics is just opening the brackets. So, but now we know about this quantity, some right? So the way, from the definition of algebraic niceness. Oh no, from the definition of combinatorial niceness. The product of UI and UJ is an S. So we have that, so this is some element in the finite field, so we don't know anything about it. This is not just an element in the finite field. This is some beta in the set S. Well, so now it already looks like that, okay? So we say that this is in fact equal to the size of the intersection of S0 with alpha plus beta S1, which we don't want to. So this step is syntactic. So here it's written, so I have some linear transformation, and I ask for how many values in S1 this linear transformation maps to S0. And here I say, well, I apply this linear transformation, and I look what is the intersection with S0. It's syntactic, there is no difference between S1. But for this form, the definition of algebraic niceness says that, well, so it's not clear what the intersection is, but it's definitely 0 modulo 2. And that's all we need.
So for the general case, Mersenne prime, is it just Mersenne prime and parse 2?
Mersenne prime and parse 2, yeah. And if you, so really the whole construct, so for more general case, you pick P to be Mersenne prime, you pick the set S to be powers of 2, so the sum will be generated by 2, and it happens to be 3 algebraically nice and somewhat combinatorially nice. And that somewhat translates into the parameters that we achieve. And if one wants this, so if one makes the assumptions and wants to go beyond polynomial communication complex to FDR to that n to the 1 over log of n, then there is more. So then somehow one needs to treat it a little differently. So then P is no longer fixed. So P starts growing, M also is growing, and one has to play with the dependence. But these are all the ideas. So apart from this, so there are some things and some